Part 1, Chapter 3, The Sevenfold Effect of the Divine Sun. As explained before, this dark world and its mortal humanity is being struck by an entire solar spectrum, an absolute bundle of rays from the Divine Sun. The most beautiful symbol of this divine glory mankind possesses is the image of the material sun, as was understood by poets, philosophers, and initiates throughout the ages. Just think of the majestic figure of Hiawatha, the hero of Longfellow's epic, whom we may view as a mythical figure representing the higher, better, and nobler life of the nations. Longfellow describes Hiawatha sitting in prayerful attitude at dawn to attain conscious union with the eternal, which exists and acts behind all dialectical life. We must see the eternal sunlight of Christ in this way too, so that we may learn to lift not only ourselves but also others open to this golden glory in order to lead them as a new people through the gates of liberating life. The times which Longfellow foresaw in the distant future, the times spoken of in prophecies, have now come. Hora est, it's time. The people of the Lord is now being called from all parts of the earth. The issue is not merely to react to this call, but to fulfill it. The point is whether we understand everything that serves our eternal peace. We have described two aspects of the divine solar spectrum, the infrared, or calling aspect, and the ultraviolet, or dissolving aspect. Applying the mystic key, we discovered that the detaching aspect must be understood in a manner totally different from that understood by dialectical man. The beginning pupil, who is conscious of being called, looks upon the aspect of breaking up as a struggle, as an intense fight against the lower, undivine nature, but the pupil himself has nothing to break up. It is the gnosis that does this. It is the ultraviolet light that clears away all the barriers, sometimes with the force of a hurricane. The only thing the pupil must do is proceed to the negation of the straitjacket in which he is tied. Do you know the story by Jack London, The Jacket? A man lies helplessly in his cell, cruelly tied in a straitjacket. He is covered in vermin, and his misery is almost total. Whoever identifies himself with such physically experienced misery dies in infernal horror. However, the hero of the piece ignores all this and remains silent. He does not accuse his jailers, he laughs at them. He thinks of the enchantment of the woods in summer, of the birds singing. He tries to perceive, via his sensory organs, the fragrance of flowers, the rippling of water in the brook. And behold, his physical weakness turns into a blessing. A splitting of the personality occurs. He leaves his straitjacketed body, slips through the walls and singing, walks to the open fields where everything basks in the sun. While the jailers look through the peephole, and the prisoner lies deathly pale, unconscious, as if forlorn, there is freedom, and, given the circumstances, an unbounded happiness. In this joy he returns to his body and the material form, miserable, eaten by vermin, starts up the exultant song of freedom, giving expression to its joy. He is conscious of being a prisoner, but at the same time of being liberated. In this state he is found by his bewildered and astonished jailers. Perhaps you can now understand what the school means by negation. Negation is no exaltation or denial of dialectical reality, but an inward detachment from it, and this detachment means hastening towards a wonderful liberty. Is such a negation an act of will, as many people suppose? Is it a change of diet or something like that? Negation conceived like this would be a cultivation of the personality. No one can proceed to negation, as understood by the spiritual school, unless he knows himself to be positively called by the infrared light impulses of the divine sun. Nobody attains this negation unless he carries the spirit, spark atom, in the heart. Whoever possesses this signature of original life is called drawn and, if willing, lifted up. he only has to go. Though his negation is consistent and positive, it is the result of the call. Experiencing the attracting power of this call and reacting to it in a positive way, negating everything of this world, is what Paul called faith, hastening towards a great goal that has appeared brightly on the horizon of life, hastening towards a light power coming from afar to embrace us in love. It is a process which fills the candidate with the power and the irresistible joy of hope and makes him sing in the straitjacket of decay. If you understand this language, then you can prepare yourself with us in the ranks of the future new mankind for the dawn that has come. It will then make sense to study the process associated with all these things in detail and to investigate all aspects more closely. Until now, we have almost exclusively used the mystic key. Let us now consider the details. The divine sun, of which we have spoken, emanates seven kinds of rays into this lost and fallen world. These rays form a complete spectrum of red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet. They are seven rays of the divine sun with which we connect from time to time by a mantric song. Thus we proceed in the red of blood community, living on divine prana's orange-colored splendor. Ours is the golden heart of Christ's solar glory. We stand together in the green land of hope. The blue expanse opens out splendidly before us in the distance. The indigo-colored cloud of the Lord leads our way, then every face is stripped of the veil, and the violet robe of kings and priests awaits us. This sun radiates into the world and stirs the spirit spark atom in the human heart. What happens then? We previously replied to this question that a man that awakened will start seeking. Such answer, however, tells us very little. We have to understand what happens in a man, both psychologically and physiologically, when he is touched by this special radiation power and then shows symptoms of reaction because of possessing the spirit spark atom. It begins with a process in the heart sanctuary. Usually, some great shock in ordinary life causes the spirit spark atom in the heart to start vibrating. Until this moment, due to conduct and blood quality of the ordinary man, this atom had been so latent and enshrouded that it could not be awakened by the light of the divine sun. When, however, as the result of bitter experience, a temporary collapse in life occurs, affecting even blood, then one of the seven heart ventricles is opened, the fire contained therein is ignited, and a blinding light is radiated towards the thymus, a small organ located under the breastbone. If the thymus proves receptive, in many cases one light impulse is not sufficient. Let us, however, assume that in this case the light impulse is effective. Then the thymus hormone carries this light radiation into the lesser blood circulation. When this work has been completed, the light power will certainly in time touch all brain centers, to which it is carried by the blood. Upon its arrival in the head sanctuary, the person concerned will then, in the first instance, be born a seeker. For through the influence of the light power in the brain centers, thoughts are aroused, all of them of the same kind. This person was touched by the calling light, and, by way of the spirit spark atom, the thymus, the blood, and the brain centers, the dialectical eye, becomes conscious thereof. Irresistibly, a whole series of thoughts is now developed. To the extent that the brain centers are thus being stimulated to a new activity, the activity of the spirit spark atom continues, since a path has been cleared, so to speak, in both blood and consciousness. You will no doubt have heard of crystal gazing. This is a negative occult method for arriving at extended etheric sight. It is a highly dangerous undertaking, since those practicing it evoke through their vision numerous earthbound forces waiting for a fatal end. This fatal end ensues because as a result of crystal gazing, the protective light of the kundalini around the pineal gland burns through. You may compare this to the blowing of a fuse in the electric circuit. When the fuse of the Kundalini burns through, the person concerned falls prey to earthbound forces for a certain period of time. Every positive or negative occult method is nothing more than a distorted imitation of transfiguristic magic. So too it is with crystal gazing, because the crystal, the finely cut, polished crystal, the sparkling jewel through which truth can be revealed, is the spirit spark atom in the heart. When a person, as the result of the universal light activity spoken of, directs his thoughts to a life which is not, as yet has to be somewhere, to the hidden things which absolutely must be grasped, then this person gazes, as it were, into the crystal in his own heart, from which at first only nebulous visions emerge. Externalized man, however, hearing about the sparkling jewel, seats himself before a piece of glass or throws herbs into a fire, and through their vapor puts himself into a state of exaltation. The spirit spark atom is also called the altar, from which a fragrance, agreeable to God, should arise, filling the entire head sanctuary, so that priestly man can understand the word of the Holy Spirit. Well then, the thoughts of the seeker arise one after another, and as you know, thoughts are creations. Thought images populate our field of manifestation, and like thoughts have the tendency of banding together. These thought images, according to their type, will bring harmony or disharmony, power or weakness into our life. And when a person starts searching in this way, we can conclude exactly what will happen. When the thymus hormone is introduced into the blood of the lesser blood circulation, the light power is naturally more or less darkened by the blood condition. By virtue of our birth, we carry along with us the blood image of natural religion or of natural occultism, of natural humanism or of materialism, and this is why the first thought images awakened by the light power are very impure and powerless. Only slowly does a change ensue. Thus we understand that seeking is a process whereby nothing may be passed over. It is a process of many, many experiences, for urged on by our thought images, we proceed to experimentation. We associate ourselves with various groups in this world because we have to test in practice the truth and correctness of our thoughts. Therefore, there are a great many people who have already trodden many paths, who have spared no pains, and made endless exertions before finally finding the spiritual school. Be comforted, for all of them had to go this way. The light power injections from the spirit spark atom, gazing into one's own crystal, have to be continued until the purest possible thought image is created. In the spiritual school, you are actively helped in this process. Day by day, hour after hour, efforts are being made to expound to you the ways and intentions of the Divine Son, spelling them out for you word by word, so to speak, so that you ultimately carry within you the mental image of immortal man as purely as possible. Near you, beside you, in your field of manifestation, the image of immortal, heavenly man must be born mentally as clearly as possible before the pupil can leave the seeking stage of the path. Paul speaks about the image of heavenly man, which the candidate must carry within him. This is a wonderful mystery, which could not yet be unveiled in the school. In 1 Corinthians 15:46, Paul speaks to the pupils preparing for the path. But it is not the spiritual which comes first, but that which relates to the soul, then the spiritual. The first man is from the earth, a man of dust. The second man is from heaven. As is the man of dust, so are those who are of the dust. And as is the man of heaven, so are those who are of heaven.
Just as we have borne the image of the man of dust, we shall also bear the image of the man of heaven.
I tell you this, brethren, flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God, nor does the perishable inherit the imperishable. Lo, I tell you a mystery of salvation. We shall be changed. The perishable must put on the imperishable, and the mortal must put on immortality.
Then shall come to pass the saying that is written, Death is swallowed up in victory.
O death, where is thy sting? When, after continued orientation on the long road of seeking, the candidate has formed the image of immortal man as a mental conception born of light power and independent of the body, intensified and vivified by the radiation of the divine sun, then a new step can be undertaken. This new step, as Paul calls it, is a mystery of salvation, thus actually a means of healing, a means for becoming whole. The recipe for this is that the perishable put on the imperishable and the mortal put on immortality. The above-mentioned mental conception plays an essential and dominant role in this process. Let us now consider this wonderful intervention in detail.